CKLN 88.1 FM, licensed by the Canadian Radio Television and Telecommunications Commission to broadcast in stereo at 88.1 MHz on the FM band. CKLN is owned and operated by CKLN Radio Incorporated, which is located at Ryerson University within the Student Campus Center in Toronto, Canada.
At the time of license application, CKLN filed a comprehensive promise of performance with the Commission, and within that document made specific commitments to its operations and programming. The license issued by the CRTC requires CKLN to honor these commitments made in the promise of performance and to comply with the FM radio broadcasting regulations.
A copy of the license with the promise of performance and conditions of licensing is available for inspection by any member of the public at the offices of the Commission and at the offices of CKLN during business hours. Radio frequencies are public property in Canada. CKLN invites your comments and inquiries.
Our mailing address is 55 Gould Street, Toronto, Ontario, postal code M5B1E9, phone number 416-979-5251.
Thank you for tuning in to CKLN 88.1 FM, and good morning.
What is reggae music?
Reggae music is that music I and I create.
I and I.
Yeah, that means I and I, within I and I. Not me and you, I and I. That means I and I, out of the same art I come from. Now this music deals with a reality.
Mm-hmm.
The art, the other half that has never yet been told, you know. The youth, I'm going to tell it through music. And them choose reggae music, reggae music, reggae music.
You know. And good morning, CKLN listeners. It is August 2nd, 2010. This is your host, BK, a.k.a. Black Krishna, also Vijay Sarma, here on CKLN Radio, hosting your CKLN's Rude Awakening morning news show, Mondays through Thursdays, from 6 a.m. to 7 a.m., and Monday evenings, Word of Mouth Mondays from 7 to 8 p.m., here on CKLN 88.1. FM, CKLN.FM online, and Rogers Cable Box 947. And this Natty Dread is in a pretty good mood, all things considered. Walking through Babylon System over the weekend and checking out the scene at Caravana 2010 here in Toronto. Pretty much starting on Thursday evening and then into the evening until about 2, 3 o'clock. Last night, so one of the reasons I'm natty is I kind of took a quick cat natty nap here at the studio before doing the show. I tried not to disturb the lovely ladies who were playing you some reggae music just before I came on, and yeah, just caught up on a couple hours of sleep before coming here to do the show. And Caravana, for those of you out there who know, it's 25-30 year celebration. You know, African-Canadian, African-American, black, old-school urban, modern-school urban, calypso music, basically the Caribbean. It's Caribbean culture, Caravana. And I've been going to Caravana on and off since I was a kid here in the city of Toronto, and it's always a good time. And this weekend was no different. Well, there were differences, but the fact that it was a good time and the fact that, you know, it was no different in that respect is something that we should all take note of. Because I'd like to start here on today's show on a holiday Monday morning here in downtown Toronto, broadcasting from Ryerson University at the corner of Church and Gould, just northeast of Yonge and Dundas in the heart of the city. I'd like to say that I am actually very proud of our police, our people, and our party. Because I got to witness all three from the perspective of someone who was there to witness all three and to see how things worked out. Because you know, to be honest, there was an excessive number of police on the streets for most of the nights, definitely Friday and Saturday. But based on what they were ordered to do, in the sense of showing up at work and hearing, all right, I'm going to be hanging out at Caravana for 12 hours, you know, they acted right, and I'm going to get into some more details. And in terms of the thousands of mostly young black people there, they acted right too. And so that was awesome to see, and that of course made the party a good thing, because people were doing what they do. Usual fun knucklehead driving up and down, staring at each other, checking out the pretty girls, checking out the pretty guys, or checking out the pretty girls, and the girls checking out the confident guys. Because I remember that even from being young, where, you know, we'd go out and try and chase girls during Caravana. And all these American guys would come up and scoop them because they had a confidence. You know, we'd be like, should I talk to her? I don't know. Should I talk to her? But they'd just be like, yo, what's going on, girl? Oh, you look good. And walk right past these polite Canadians. We were like, hey, what the hell? So anyway, that was but the point is that there was all that going on, you know, to varying degrees over the course of the few days. And people kind of understood, you know, what was happening in the sense of, well, those guys have to be here in terms of the police who are doing their jobs and ordered to be there in order to do, you know, whatever their bosses tell them to do when they were there. And the partiers wanted to be there, you know. And one thing that, you know, you got to say, when thousands of relatively young black people decide to spend their hard-earned money show up somewhere and have a good time? They know how to. And why would I say that? Does that sound like I'm being racist because I use the word black or something? No. I'm saying that here on the Rude Awakening show that I do play some music and some reggae music, among others. But I'm saying that because there's a lot of stereotypes out there associated with Caravana and associated with black people and other minorities and so on. And when you have sort of a massive experiment like this, you know, where the people that are allowing the Caravana event to go on here, you know, some of them, anyway, at the top levels, are the same ones who are, you know, suggesting that we need an excessive police presence to not only police the event, because I can understand why there'd be some police there, you know, in today's world, you know, it's no surprise, but to actually be ordered to, in many cases, to bump into us, you know. I think the guys at the top have a club us like a baby seal mentality with them, using kind of like a big stick to whack us. By sort of getting us closer and closer to that point, and even facilitating those types of, you know, situations in certain circumstances, and they're certainly moving us, or trying to move us to that point, while we're trying to move as well as we can while this is going on, and yet, you know, for that circumstance where, you know, not only were they along the sides of, say, Yonge Street. And not only were they in Clubland, but many of them were asked to walk among us. And that's a whole different story. If someone's just standing there, you can eventually get used to it and keep moving. But they're actually asked to walk through very crowded streets full of mostly black people. And just gorgeous girls, you know, nice enough, you know, goofy, fun guys. And for that situation, it was very, very interesting to see how everybody conducted themselves. You know, in their own headspace, trying to enjoy what they were doing and staying out of each other's way. Because, you know, you can do anything, you know, in that situation if you have power. So, and there's a big difference. And this is taking it back to the G20 situation, G20 martial law, where early on during the G20, When the police from across Canada were here, and when they were looking for, you know, protest terrorists, tourists, the black bloc guys, I don't know how they expect to find them. They dress normal the rest of the time, but, you know, whatever. I went to the G20 a bunch on previous shows here on CKLN Radio. And so on today's show, you know, flashing forward to comparing it to Caravana. At the beginning of the G20, early on anyway in the week, I mean, I was out from Monday the 22nd, Tuesday the 23rd, Wednesday the 20, no, Monday the 21st, Tuesday the 22nd, and the 23rd and so on, and then through the week until the 26th and 27th on the weekend. The police's body language changed from looking at all of us carefully, you know, and having their eyes really trained on us and kind of imposingly forward to a much more relaxed attitude in terms of, like, you know, literally just leaning back a little bit, you know, lean back. and you know, what was neat was that, right, put it this way, you can try this with anybody, pretty much anybody, of course, but there's a scale upon which, you know, one feels the results of this action. And so, you know, if you're small, or maybe if you're a female to male sort of thing, which is just based on size, really, you know, physicality, in this type of equation, you know, if you move an inch forward, it changes the dynamic between, you know, you and the other person. And if the cops move an inch forward, you know, if a cop moves an inch forward towards me, well, that's, you know, 5-10 times as much as most guys, you know, in terms of the threat level going up, which is still minor at that point. It's just to move an inch forward, but it's there, and your body starts getting physically aware of you know, what that threat level is or may be or could turn into. And so, you know, what was really neat was that they, for the most part, because having seen this progression, martial law at the G20, an attempted sort of soft martial law here where there wasn't IDing, but there was a designed overwhelming police presence on Friday and Saturday nights, especially on Yonge Street and in the Club District off Richmond and Queen Streets, and Adelaide and King, for that matter, in downtown Toronto. They were mostly hanging back, and people were moving out of each other's ways on sidewalks, and it was a good time in that respect. Because if they decide to, you know, as a unit or even individually, but more specifically as a unit, if they decide to lean forward and look at all of us, it creates a very, very suffocating presence where, you know, people are aware they're being watched, people are half as loud, half as expressive, and so on. But if they decide to fall back and we're there, not just passing through, but maybe for an extended period of time, then, you know, we just get used to the fact that they're just not really looking for trouble. And as long as we don't cause any, you know, we're not going to be, you know, eyed especially. And, you know, and so it's all about body language and about, you know, how did they act based on the fact that they had to be there? And how do we act based on the fact that we want to be there? And how is Caravan of 2010 here in Toronto, with an overwhelming police presence, different from the G20 martial law situation with an overwhelming police presence? Now, it's totally different events, totally different, you know, things. And of course, a lot of the police out there knew what happened at the G20. So, you know, they know that a lot of their operations are crazy by now. You know, not that many didn't before, and not that we don't all have crazy things to do at our job and things that we don't think that we should do. And I can't believe my boss is making me do this. And so on. And yet, you know, what's neat is that if they have to be there, then when they are relaxed, it's a better environment to be in. And so through the course of, you know, the weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, you know, I definitely saw, you know, a lot of relaxing going on. From, you know, fairly alert, you know, and a couple of, you know, arrests or questionings that I saw, which, you know, were handled cleanly. You know, I got a couple on videotape. And because I just pulled it out as soon as, you know, I saw it happening. Stood a safe, you know, not interfering, distance away. Had a couple security guys yelling at me, "Hey, buddy, what are you doing? Hey, what are you doing? How are you filming?" I'm like, "I'm filming in public." They weren't yelling at me to stop me. They were just cussing me out on behalf of the cops, I guess. They're trying to, you know, maybe, you know, thin blue line style. Maybe they're just trying to take this side. And they knew they could cuss me out walking by away from the scene. After running towards it, after a bunch of cops had, basically, from what I heard shortly after, an older, you know, middle-aged, aggressive, you know, black guy in glasses had been asking this, you know, thick white girl, younger, a little aggressively, maybe had been grabbing her arm or something, and she was trying to resist that, and this officer just stopped his car at the parking garage, sort of halfway between Queen and Yonge, on the west side of Dundas. Hey, literally, he just went, and all I saw was, I thought he hit somebody. He was behind a few people. I didn't know what the hell it was. But he just stopped his car, jumped out, door was open, and boom, dude was taken to the ground, and a bunch of other cops were there in seconds, and a couple security guys. The guy was yelling at me, like, "Hey, man, get a life." And I was like, "Hey, man, I might save a life." You know, and they just kept walking by. And I just chilled, and the police saw me filming, obviously, but I wasn't doing anything. And they weren't doing anything. They had him on the ground face down, but they didn't jump on him. You know, there was another 200 witnesses there who can say, you know, who can attest to all of this, by the way. So sometimes when I go off on the radio here on CKLN, I'd be like, "Oh, man, I did this, I saw that, I did this, I saw that." And you might be like, "That guy's crazy. He lives in his own head." But no, I got 1,000 other witnesses. I don't know if they'll, you know, they'll talk. But if you talk to them, then you might find out. And so they took him down clean, and then they propped him up, you know, and then they bugged him and did what they had to do. And when I found out later why he was taken down, you know, just a minute after us when crossing the street, You know, at which point there were 40 cops there because, you know, they were just trying to figure out what was going on. And honestly, there wasn't much to do police work for at the Caravan. It's certainly not in that way, you know, in the sense of being right there. You know, after a few hours, you get the idea that, you know, $1 million in training that you may have under your belt and experience and so on is just not going to be used. You know, there's no detective work. There's no figuring anything out. There's just a crowd of people there. And so, but anyway, the bottom line is that, and a couple of questionings here and there and so on. So, but it went well. It went well. And I could tell by the way people were partying. I could tell by the way the police were cool with it. And it went from a reasonable, you know, sort of interested presence to Sunday night where instead of, you know, like Friday and so on, sort of looking at us, by Sunday evening, they were just looking at each other. They were in little groups talking to each other and just getting along like a bunch of, like, you know, friends, just talking some mess like at a, you know, a smoker circle outside a house party. And so that was good to see because in a second, you know, if anything went off, you know, they could drop you dead on a hammer in a second and a half, you know. I mean, if they had to, you know, they got the weapons and training for it. So it's not like they couldn't, you know, do that. They're trained to notice things, you know, even out of the corner of their eye. That's also why I nod to them a lot, because a lot of them just notice me walking by and that vague familiar, then they see me and then I see them. And that's not to say anything about me and them in special and this and that. I'm not working with anybody or anything like that. I'm not against anybody, for anybody. I'm just trying to break down, you know, the truth as I see it, you know, on the streets of Toronto. And this is the truth as I see it. What happened? Well, here on today's show, I would like to take any calls from listeners out there who did go to Caravana and who do, you know, have any thoughts on this issue. You can call me any if you'd like. The number here is 416-595-1655. Again, you are listening to CKLN's Rude Awakening, and this is your host BK, aka Black Krishna, also known as Vijay Sarma. And I'm bringing that name back because my political aspirations are ramping up because things like this put me in a good mood. It's the type of thing where well. So let's take us through a bit of history here. Because I'm feeling good about what happened, and I had my traditional adrenaline rush every time martial law is declared in Toronto, which gives me a fair amount of energy, and I kind of look at the game being played with the chess pieces involving the police and the people. And I'm just like, and occasionally I get frustrated, you know. It's like, you know, the city of Toronto is like my wayward party kid who gets into a bit of trouble once in a while because they don't take care of some, you know, a fight that they're either not finishing if they didn't start or metaphorically if they started. So the first thing you do is, they started by not taking this stuff seriously, if you want to look at it that way. So my first thought is, all right, you know, make sure everybody's safe, make sure they're safe, make sure everything's safe, and make sure, and, you know, you try and negotiate with the bigger kid, or you try and get the kid out of the situation, and I mean the city of Toronto as a whole, metaphorically, and in this situation, and then, you know, you're in the car, you know, and then you're with the kid, and then you're like, you know, son, are you okay? Yeah, Dad, I'm okay. You know, I really, next time I'll be a little more careful. And then you're like, ah, that's good, son. And then you take the belt and you're like, what the hell were you thinking? Ah, come here. Don't run from me. Ah, oh, man. Oh, I'm telling you. A month after martial law, we see martial law again. He's like, oh, come on. I'm just like, ah, we got to get active on this whole, you know, we just got to get active on this whole New World Order thing, the big picture. But fortunately, we did act for the most part like this. We did act for the most part like, you know, we could be love and put love out into the world, and we acted for the most part like we could be love, and it made for a good time, and especially after the bad PR over the G20 situation, you know, where certainly there were some actions that were taken by the police in Toronto that were reprehensible, but there was also a bunch of weird ones. That just didn't make any sense from any perspective. Not, you know, excesses as part of normal, you know, police actions, but bizarre Kafka-esque things like, you know, videos of guys being, you know, thrown into unmarked vans and driven off, which were suspicious because no one's come out to say they were thrown into an unmarked van, and it's to the best of my knowledge, which means either they've disappeared, which would be unusual at this stage of you know, the application of martial law in Canada, you know, although not unheard of, probably, but certainly, you know, rare. And then you got to figure that, you know, they always say the police did this, the police did that. First of all, police don't do anything. You know, it's at best the sheriff, and it's more than likely for, you know, a major event where there are political and other considerations. It's more likely on the political side of things that the big framework decisions are made, and then the police are ordered to draft up, you know, certain plans to deal with that. You know, the sponsors of Caravana are sort of convinced that for their money, it would be good to have a ton of police there, and to have a presence that guarantees no violence, which means they're hanging out right beside you. You know, and so that type of logic is sold, you know, on the inside, even though it's not necessary. But anyway, so the point is that, you know, it wasn't it was interesting to see how the whole thing went down. And again, the number here is 416-595-1655 here on CKLN Radio. And if you were at Caravana, and if you are up here on this holiday Monday morning, and if you would like to call in, and if you would like to share your experiences, good or bad, then, you know, by all means, you know, please do so. But all right, so let's start off with where this started off, you know, for me, if you don't mind. And that is on Thursday night. I, by total fluke, accident, you know, I bump into things in this city. I saw the beginnings of what looked like I saw last time at the G20 going on Thursday night. And I was sort of leaving Dundas Square, actually. And I was on my way out after hanging out for a bit. And, you know, I got to the show, and then I had a full day, and then doing what I do, just figuring a way out of the mess that we're all in where, you know, we're kind of aware of some of these things, and aware we're paying more for stuff, and aware that, you know, the kids are messed up, you know, and instead of going, oh, really? What's wrong? And then going over there and taking 5 minutes to fix it. We just sort of live with it. It's just, just crazy. Certain countries wouldn't put up with it. Certain countries would be like, kids messed up. What happened? And you go over there and be like, oh, you know, they ran into some, you know, scary animals in the forest, and they're all crazy. And it's, oh, let's go over and tell them a story and blah, 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 blah. You know, it's more like, no, this is just the way it is. So you know, there are those things. But we're aware of these things, and yet we're socialized to avoid dealing with them. And there's a bunch of tough guys out there afraid of what a bunch of nerds look at. So, come on, you know. And there's a bunch of nerds out there that are afraid of what a bunch of tough guys bring them in terms of putting themselves in line to either discover this information, whistleblow about this information, about the New World Order, the forces behind globalization, the power elite who run the world, interlocking oligarchy worldwide who are pushing for a one world order where the conditions at the G20 martial law won't be special, they'll be normal. Because, you know, that's what they're pushing for incrementally with these stages. And yeah, we can push back, and we did, you know, at Caravana. So, anyway, back to Dundas Square. I was on my way out of Dundas Square. Well, hold on a second.
Like all how quality is the destruction of mankind. Herb is healing of the nation. The more you accept herb, the more you accept Rastafari. You dig what I say? We who accept herb. Herb is important, but herb is more important to the people who don't accept it yet, because that is a reality. I mean, it's not Sarelen, Sarelen is something that you crave, but you check it in your sense and say, herb. Herb is a plant. I mean, herbs are good for everything. Why these people want to do so much good for everyone who call themselves governments and this and that? Why them say you must not use the herb? You see? And we take that and we can't find, we just see them just say, no, you mustn't use it, you mustn't use it because it make you rebel. Against what?
Exactly. When there's anything going on in your culture that people are complaining about, you know, it's worth figuring out why you live in a culture where we have things to complain about. When we're working on stuff all the time, there's lots of jobs out there, less these days, of course. But you know, the point is that, well, yeah, I didn't necessarily mean that. But the point is, it is a DJ Concept 1 Bob Marley mixtape album I'm playing this morning for the show. But the point is that you know, where Bob's talking about on herb, you know, a lot of people are scared of marijuana, by the way, because they say it makes you paranoid. But if it makes you paranoid and doesn't make a lot of other people paranoid, then maybe it's not the weed that's making you paranoid. Maybe it's the paranoia that's making you paranoid. And maybe that's an individual thing. So in the same way they say, you know, they have repetition. Why did the police do this? Why did the police do that? So many people ask that year after year, and it drives me crazy. Because whenever I see a whole bunch of them doing something, I always think, what were they ordered to do? And a lot of people, you know, cause that's the truth. It's not them. They're just doing their thing. They're doing their job like you are. Like, you can't just go to work and decide. You can't just put on a damn uniform. Like, a soldier can't just put on a damn uniform. You know, a guy who works at McDonald's can't just put on a damn uniform, show up and go, what did I decide to do today? Or what should I decide to do today? I mean, it doesn't make any damn sense. But you know, that's propaganda, repetition. And so eventually we start speaking the way they give us, which prevents us from understanding, you know, things, and causes problems in the problem reaction solution vein, by getting us to unfairly demonize certain parties in this whole equation, and so back to Dundas Square. Thursday night, I'm catching some small activity at Young and Dundas. About a half a dozen cops are taking two corners each, the northeast and the northwest, in a holding action. and like they're sort of there to, you know, keep that property and to surveil from that vantage point. And there's no reason. There was a bunch of people there before, and there was a bunch of people there after, and it didn't really, you know, make much difference. No one called them. But they showed up, and they just did that, and there was a few others on bikes. And I thought, oh, I wonder what's going on here. And then they left, as far as I know, you know. Because I kept walking for a bit, and I thought, all right, now what do I do, you know? And I got to tell you, it's not easy for me to do, you know, sort of keep an eye on the police in this city. It's not that easy for me to talk about them. I try and make it easy. I got a radio show here on CKLN Radio, and I want to make sure that whoever's listening to the show has a positive listening experience. And I want to make sure that I'm not messed up by a lot of things that I do. But, you know, it is, you get nervous at times going, how do I do this without, you know, kicking them off and, you know, without selling out, you know, any support I have with anybody, from the police to the public to anybody, you know, without looking like a damn fool, without looking like I have another agenda, and without, you know, getting possibly hurt if somebody who could hurt me takes the wrong attitude about my right attitude. So, you know, got to be a little respectful. That's why I'm not constantly filming him. I'm like, it's just a dude. He's just doing his thing. And if there's nothing to film, there's nothing to film. And, you know, occasionally I'll take some short films. Not that I'm against the people that do. Not that I'm against people that do. But the way I do this and the way I'm moving in this city on these issues, you know, with my own eccentricities and excesses and quirks, which, you know, are the byproducts of anybody, you know, trying to reach a million people and, you know, get them hip and get them going. And not just trying to reach a million people to get them hip and get them going, but trying to reach a million people to get them hip and get them going to reach the rest about issues that we're normally not, you know, encouraged to talk about. You know, I've got to do some calculations, use some logic, and try and do the right thing in these situations. So anyway, Thursday night, Dundas Square, saw that, and I doubled back to check it out, and they were gone, and I decided, all right, so I know the two main scenes of the New World Order crime, which we all handled relatively well as you know, victims of it, in the sense of the slightly awkward social situation that was created, which we behaved, you know, very socially well, you know, with, So I went down to the club land and in the club district, and I saw a crazy sight. An almost empty club district. Which is not crazy. Thursday's not as crazy as Friday and Saturday are here in downtown Toronto. But in fact, there was people there. But I saw like 25 all black clad police officers in the military boots. You know, with the tucked into the ankles and weapons and the whole thing, walking around as a block on Thursday night in a fairly empty club district, and I thought, oh my God, this is just nuts. Now, quickly, you see that you know, a lot of them, and some police know me in the city, so you get nods periodically depending on who it is, obviously, and the mood they're in, obviously. And whether or not they're distracted, obviously. Someone's having a conversation. I don't bother them. And so, I expect the same courtesy, generally speaking. And I think we all should, unless there's, you know, a real specific reason. So, you know, just leave them alone and leave everybody alone. In certain situations you get noticed, a little quick nod. And I do quick nods. People don't like that. They think I'm being disrespectful almost. But most people get the point that I'm not trying to, you know, I don't want nothing from you. I don't want nothing with you in the sense of a fight. So, you know, I'm just being a little a polite, you know, respectful, you know, nod in the sense of the way that that's been traditionally the way people have done it for thousands of years. to signify to each other that they're not planning on being a threat and they're saying hello. You know, it's that type of combo. And so what was interesting was that a lot of them looked a little bit, and I hate to talk about them, because like, you know, people got to be feeling like, ah, I can't hear this. In which case, don't turn it off. But it's important to understand that when your police are being used as a weapon against you, the people of Toronto, and when this is happening worldwide, you have to understand what that is, how are people reacting and taking action when this is the situation, and you know, what can we learn from that? So, by and large, you know, despite the fact there were 25 of them, and it was Thursday night and it's fairly quiet, people, they're mixing and mingling with people in ways that I hadn't seen that comfortably. And I remember last year at Caravana, they certainly weren't. Last year at 2009 Caravana, they certainly weren't. And I'll have more on that in a sec. And again, most of them were, but it wasn't, you know, part of their job was not to last year, I think, not to mix comfortably with people, but to actually clear them out of the way like a snowplow. And so, but back to Thursday night, this past Thursday, it is Monday morning, here on CKLN 88.1 FM, CKLN.FM online, and Rogers Cable Box packs, Rogers Cable Box 947. Here you're listening to CKLN's Rude Awakening. Number to call in, by the way, still 416-595-1655. If you have any comments on Caravana, most specifically, or anything else important to bring up, and I'll break down a couple of key items towards the end of the show, but I really do want to lock this Caravana thing down, because this is investigative journalism for me. This is Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday night, and Sunday night of me observing what happened when the police were sent to heavily police an event with thousands of young black people. So, oh, we do have a call coming in. I'll finish the Thursday story in a nutshell. They were, well, I'm going to take this call, but Thursday story, they were pretty chilled out and they left. So there it is. Good morning, caller. You are on the air. Please, no swearing. Can you let us know what you're on?
Well, my name is Deborah. I'm going to be honest with you. I did not go to Caravana, but from what you're telling me, there were a lot of cops there, and I'm saying good. There were no incidents. And that's my opinion. You probably won't agree with me, but I have no trouble with cops being very present at these events.
Well, I'll tell you this, Deborah. I remember Caravana, you know, 10, 15 years ago, going there as a kid. And I remember there were police there. And they were ordered to be, you know, every sort of two streets up Yonge Street, about 50, 100 feet back. So they were close enough to react in seconds if they had to react anything. And it was not, and people were aware they were there. So, you know, there was that deterrence effect, which I think is what you're sort of saying is necessary, you know, when there's some knuckleheads, you know, in the crowd, like
yeah,
there is in most
crowds.
Right, but the point is that deterrent worked. And back then, and because we knew it was there.
Well, I'd rather have them there than have incidents. So that's my opinion. Thank you.
Thank you, Deborah. And I'd agree with you. I totally agree with you, and I'm not trying to argue with that point. The question is, how is that deterrent, you know, needed? So, for example, should we have them on all our street corners? Because we have knuckleheads on our street corners, or if you live in a poor neighborhood and there's a lot of crime, should we have police there all the time, or should we make sure we don't have poor neighborhoods? Because sometimes it's a one or the other situation you're given, and if you accept one and don't work for the other, then it becomes a problem to some degree anyway, depending on who you get. And so, and it is, honestly, it can be with a lot of police there. Sometimes you party half as hard. You're not as loud, you're not as expressive, and so on. So that's an issue. Another call coming in. Good morning, caller. You're on the air.
Good morning, VJ.
Good, sir. How are you?
Well, thank you. Is your name Vijay as in Vijay Singh or Vijay as in video jockey?
Well, it can be shortened to video jockey, but Vijay Singh. And what's interesting is that until he became a big-time golfer, a lot of people hadn't heard the name. But after he did, people use that example, and I do as well, to clarify it.
Well, I was thinking this put you in the category of Vijay Squared.
Sure.
Almost like the gay designer brothers D Squared.
Sure. You know, it's possible. I don't know who those people are, so, you know, it is what it is. But, you know, what was really neat at Carabana, and with respect to the police presence there, is 10, 15 years ago, whatever, they were, you know, up the street, and there was, you know, just some usual knuckleheaded stuff going on Yonge Street, where there was a bunch of, you know, there's even people sitting on top of cars, there was music playing, and it was just teeming masses of people, just chilled out for the most part. You know, they say the caravan is wrongly associated with violence, and if you add the violence, and if you add potential for violence, and you add you know, black in there, and young, and urban, or you know, which a lot of people are at these things. If anything were to happen, then it could be spun by the media so easily, and then people, oh yeah, Carabana is so violent. But if you, what do you expect violent to be? You know, because I expect violent to be, like, if it was violent, people wouldn't come back. You know, if you go to a restaurant and it makes people sick, then people don't go to that restaurant no more. And so Carabana is not violent, because there's tons of people there, and there's no violence. Now, there may be some violence at some point. You can't, well, people do the devil's advocate. Well, what about the, yeah, okay, just like in the, what about in Toronto? What about, is Toronto violent? We have 50 to 100 murders a year, 100, maybe 100, 120, something like that, you know, compared to other cities with hundreds, you know, of a parallel size. We're not violent. But yes, there was a guy who got shot, you know, you can say that. But that doesn't make Toronto violent. And that, having the fact that there was, and there has been violence in Carabana, does not make it a violent event. And if you go there, it's not like you're, you know, it's not like the protest. The protests are violent, you know. Every protest is, the whole thing's designed to be absolutely ridiculous, you know. A bunch of politicians with, you know, voting records and phone numbers and emails and faxes and electorates, you know, where you can simply approach people they represent and say, hey, this guy's not representing you right, you know, and show them how you can pressure them. Instead, they tell you, the politicians, the media, the government, the powers in our society, the establishment, tell their foundation, tax-exempt foundation-funded activists out there, who a lot of them are nice people and that sort of thing, but they're working for government-approved activism, which is a communist system ruled by council. The government appoints people to represent you, and when the government's evil, they make sure they, you know, confuse or neuter the power and effectiveness of the people who are representing you and give them a way of talking to the government that the government's okay with, which doesn't necessarily mean the government has to do anything. So the government and whoever promote the idea of going over to some, you know, fence or field or something, chanting a bunch of old communist slogans, yelling at cops, getting beaten up, and going home, and then convincing you that after they convince you to act that stupid, they'll listen to your serious political concerns. And it's just absolute insanity that's gone on. And then yet that's the thing to do. That's the Facebook of activism. You know, the rest of the year, yeah, there's people starving, there's people dying in wars, and there's poor people here, and we're losing our rights. Unless I get to go yell about it once in a while at a rock concert style event, I don't do anything. And again, that's what they engineer. Okay, look, I'm gonna take you through the timeline. So Thursday night, you know, took a little look around, wasn't much going on, and you know, even the 25 black clad officers, you know, going through the financial district, they just looked a little bored, just chilled out, and they knew it was fairly empty. There wasn't even that much to look at. So, you know, they just pretty much wanted to go home, and I assume they did. Friday night, I had a fortune of running into a good guy at a Starbucks in the Annex, and I met this guy once last year. He's experienced, but he's just a good looking white guy, black dress pants, light blue dress shirt, tall. Looks like he's off of TV or something. And so we were hanging at Starbucks, and he was killing a little time after a date, and so we decided to keep hanging. And then we walked up and down Yonge Street, you know, all Friday night, just yapping away. Me with some stubble, just showing off a bit of the, bit of the age in a way, really, just so I can be seen as a sober voice of this thing, as opposed to, you know, shaving down and prettying up, which I would normally do at a big party. Whatever. I tried to still be all right, you know, decent looking and in a decent headspace. And so we were talking about all sorts of crazy things up and down Yonge Street, just sort of patrolling Yonge Street and on Friday night and seeing it. And before the Friday night, though, I wrote an article, which you can find on my blog, blackkrishna.blogspot.com. And I wrote an article called G20 Martial Law Part 2. Caravana 2009-2010 Police Reports and Predictions. Because last year at Caravana 2009, it looked like the officers in our city were part of a NATO exercise, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, which is a treaty between the militaries of the United Kingdom, Canada, America, and Australia, to the best of my knowledge. Maybe another country or two I'm missing there. But India might even be Commonwealth at this point. Who knows what they've been working on since I learned this stuff as a kid. And I look at, you know, I know a bit about NATO recently, so I'm not totally ignorant, but I haven't looked into them that much. But I do remember researching them for that Caravana last year and hearing about it, and then seeing the population control exercises, including, you know, what we now get to call kettling, in the sense of the media giving us fun words to normalize, you know, crazy stuff. But really, population or depopulation control exercises, where the police were just clearing Dundas Square super fast and herding groups of people into each other, you know, and the guys with little blinking lights in their back, who were again there yesterday, I don't know what the hell. I guess that's there so they can identify each other for these drills, kind of like you identify your own paintball team or laser tag team, for that matter, for those of you out there who play that sort of thing. So they were running those drills last year to kind of herd us around, and there were groups of, you know, the guys in yellow vests last year were, you know, generally cool, and the guys in the black uniforms were really just clearing people off the sidewalks in a weird way. I talked to other people at this Caravana, and they said, yeah, there's a huge difference. So I wrote an article kind of referencing the possibility of a false flag attack, to getting the cops to attack a whole bunch of us, because it is a... Because after the G20, a lot of them are really hip to the fact that, whoa, something's going on here. Like, we're getting ordered to do crazy things in our city, you know, to our people, where we live, and then we're getting a bad rap, and I gotta go hang with my friends. My friend's like, hey, man, why are you guys doing this stuff? And we're like, we're just following orders. And then the cops gotta be like, oh, and then the guys gonna be like, oh, so you do anything they order you to? And it's like, man, you want to tell, you know, the media to tell the truth and risk their jobs. You want to tell the cops to tell the truth or stop following orders and risk their jobs. And you won't even burn a DVD and hand it out. And you won't even hand out a flyer or put up a poster or send an email or comment on, you know, articles online of mainstream media referencing New World Order stuff on a regular basis, or do anything about this huge New World Order problem of eugenicist inbred banking families at the top. Who've printed fiat money from nothing, loaned it to governments, and who then tax us to pay it back, and who now, thanks to the aid of technology and through their own decadence, want to get rid of us all. They want to rob and murder us in that order, and you won't do that, and you expect all these people to do, you know, I mean, it's just, let's check our heads here. All right, let's check our heads in the info war, because that's the best way to break all this down. And that is the info war we've all got to fight on our off time. That includes the cops. Like, when you're not, you know, at your job, you know, there is fun stuff to do, and there's responsibilities. But, you know, if protecting your family, friends, city, and country is one of them, then, you know, talking about these issues to make sense of them as opposed to living with not making sense of them, and finding out information that can help make sense of them, and passing that on so other people can make sense of them, is probably of paramount importance at this time, before we're living in a place that just doesn't make any sense. So I wrote an article breaking down some of this, this stuff on Friday. Sent it out, you know, to sort of cross Canada truthers and invite people to post it and repost it. Included a link to last year's Carabana so people would know, you know, what to expect, what not to. And last year's Carabana article, rather. And then Friday I went out and it was great. Well, even though the cops had to walk through and there was some, you know, ordinary looking cops in regular vests, and there was some, dudes in the black uniforms. They were mixing with the crowd, and everyone was kind of moving out of each other's way, and people were cool, and, you know, there just wasn't much knuckleheaded stuff going on. And again, a couple of clean takedowns I saw, you know, but Friday was so chilled out. I was just walking around, I was just like, this man, it's so peaceful, it's boring. I'd going off, popping off crazy things with my buddy. And then Saturday night, it was much the same thing. Only instead of really sort of, and the cops hadn't seen Carabana, I think, or at least some of them, to that degree. I felt bad, though. You get some 40-year-old guys in ETF trucks, you know, gray uniforms, trained to, like, take on the toughest criminals in the world, like narco-terrorists, you know. We may need you guys if we actually do rebel and we are attacked by UN troops or private security who say, hey, Toronto, we want you back in the New World Order. And these guys go, oh, it's on, is it? All right, let's go. We got to defend the hood. And so we got to support them in that if anything like that happens. But that's all crazy speculation. But I did feel sorry for some of these guys because maybe some of them didn't want to hang out there for 12 hours. You know, partying with a bunch of young black guys and young black people and the way they party. Not because there's nothing against them, but that's just not their scene. You know, maybe they'd pass through one day with their wife or something and go, oh, interesting, this is Carabana, and wander off. But they don't have to listen to reggae and rap music for 12 hours if they normally listen to rock music. So I just felt bad for them. Because, again, we don't want to let their jobs get crappy either and get them all in a bad mood. But Saturday, you know, things were cool, a little tense a couple of times with a couple of events, but that's okay. And then things went well as far as I could see. And by the end of Saturday night, at like 4 o'clock in the morning, you know, people have kind of settled into their grooves. Oh, a bunch of them sitting at the sides. You know, they're sitting. You never see cops sitting. They're sitting on the ledges. Their hats are off. You know, some of them are tired. They're yawning. You know, some of them are standing. I pass by Young and Dundas at 4 in the morning. I see 50 cops on each corner. And I see 50 people, you know, maybe a couple hundred people max there, kind of sporadically around. And even the cops are looking at it like, this is completely nuts. But, you know, they're not mad. They're just like, one lovely female police officer's there. I nod to a few of them as they see me coming up and kind of surveilling things, so I look a little differently. And she gives me an extra look and smile, so I turn to her and I give her a little longer bow, you know, briefly. And I think everyone was happy with what happened and what didn't happen. What happened is a bunch of people had to be there for their jobs, and a bunch of people wanted to be there to party. And those people happened to be police with different responsibilities and abilities and so on. And one of them was people, mostly young black people. And what was great is that things went well. And Sunday, again, from Saturday night to Sunday night, they were just in circles talking to themselves, and so were many other people in Clubland and on Yonge Street. A good time was had by all. Or everyone that I saw, and I saw enough people to say that this was a successful Carabana event, and we should appreciate that. But it's been your host, BK, a.k.a. Black Krishna, a.k.a. Vijay Sarma, here for your CKLN's Rude Awakening for August 2nd, 2010. I do hope you enjoyed the show. I do hope you enjoyed the firsthand investigative reporting that I brought to you, and I'll have more for this in my blog at blackkrishna.blogspot.com. The People's DJ, David James, is up next. You're going to want 4 hours of jazz here on your holiday Monday, so please do stick around for that, because he's a jazz genius, and he's going to serve you up right. Remember this. Talk about this. Because the media might not, because they're into their job right now as a whole. Individuals might, but their job as a whole you know, at, especially during the G20s, to demonize the police and activism, and a lot of activists as well are ignoring the federal ranking role in the G20 situation. So the people have to talk about what Carabana was, how it went, so that the story stays and so that it becomes something we can aim for the future, as well as the InfoWar to make sure conditions in this city and in this country continue improving. Have a great day, everybody. I'm back tomorrow. Peace out.